The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello, this is Aniko Gal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the March 2017 editions of both 17 Magazine and Glamour Magazine, Listening to the Children, Testimonials from the World's Blind and Partially Sighted Teenagers. And we will be starting a wonderful new novel. It is called Not If I See You First by Eric Lindstrom. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at www.kiwanisfoundation.org. Well, welcome back, everyone. Today we're going to start with an article in the March 2017 edition of Glamour Magazine. And it is called In Praise of Women Who Speak Their Minds. They pretty much make the world go round. All right. We're taught early on in life that arguing isn't polite. Unlearning that lesson and figuring out when raising your voice makes sense can take years, but it's a crucial female life skill, and it's helpful to have some role models along the way. As we put together this issue, devoted to the arts of self-expression and activism, I found myself thinking about the women I've learned big and little speaking out lessons from, including, but not limited to, 1. The girl in my 9th grade history class, Carolyn Umana, who stood up before a largely skeptical 1980s suburban Virginia classroom and made an impassioned case for the Equal Rights Amendment, which our state, and a handful of others, had not ratified. Her voice shook as she argued that women should have rights equal to those of men. It was the first time I'd ever heard a woman stick up for the value of other women. Novel concept. But more than that, it was the first time I'd ever seen someone stick her neck out for an issue she cared about. I remember looking at her and thinking, that girl has guts. The ERA never did get ratified, but Carolyn's example lodged somewhere deep in my consciousness. Another one, my friend Elizabeth, a Southerner who, one night just after the 2016 election, was chatting college football with a group sitting next to her in a New York City restaurant. She's a Georgia Bulldog. They backed LSU. One of the men leaned over and, chuckling conspiratorially, showed her a meme on his phone. An image of the White House with a fake headline reading, Trump Forces Black Family from Home. Initially, I just said, yeah, sorry, not funny, and excused myself, Elizabeth recalls. I was in shock and fuming because it was so racist. I hated that he automatically assumed that because I'm from the South, I appreciate that. I also, my daughter was with me, and I wanted to show her that calling people out is not rude. So I called him over and said, I just need you to know that I found what you showed me incredibly offensive. He seemed taken aback. But as a teacher, I think about these moments all the time, she says. I want kids to call things out as it is. That's racist. That's mean. That's not funny. And that's a reminder to all of us. Finally, the woman on the most recent cover of Glamour, Lena Dunham. No, not just because she expresses her opinion so vocally, though I admire that too, but because she is one of the few celebrities who isn't afraid to correct herself publicly if she feels she's gotten something wrong. Pay attention. So few people do this. It's no secret, quote, that the Internet hasn't always been kind to me, she says. Sometimes with great reason, and sometimes with no reason at all. But, Lena continues, I feel One of the greatest gifts we can offer is to learn and grow publicly. It may not always be valued in the moment, but it sets a necessary example. It's also important to remember that you can't say something with passion and have it resonate with everyone. The only words that don't offend a single human being are words delivered without purpose. Learning to hear each other is the hardest job we have. The point? Speaking up feels good. Very good. But more important, it also shows everybody around you how it's done. Maya Angelou put it in this way. Each time a woman stands up for herself, without knowing it, possibly, without claiming it, she stands up for all women. With that in mind, I tracked down Caroline Umana, my high school classmate, to thank her for her example. Turns out she's now a clinical nurse and a mom in Baltimore, and she said her first thought was that I'd called her to warn her she was about to appear as a glamour don't. Instead, I told her about the impression she'd made. Funny, I do remember that, she said. I remember learning the statistic that women earned 61 cents to every dollar a man earned for the same job. It didn't make sense, excuse me, and that angered me and fueled my presentation. I come from a family of four girls, and my mom never encouraged us to depend on a man. Today, Carolyn is an avid volunteer and organizer who has done everything from helping start a local school to creating garden clubs for kids. She says her activism comes from her Catholic faith. As a friend of mine put it, she says, aspire to inspire before you expire. I hope you provide inspiration to all the women around you. I know they're watching. And that was an article by Cindy Lev, editor-in-chief. Well, last week we listened to an article on a formula for feeling good, a formula for happiness. That was in the March issue of 17 Magazine. And that article was entitled B times, in parentheses, M plus F plus A plus plus, parentheses. This week, I'd like to expand on that happiness theme by reading a few more tips by the same author. His name? Raj Raghunathan. He's also the author of the book, If You're Smart, Why Aren't You Happy? So the first tip has to do with feel-good foods. All right, so feel-good foods can help you smile, and not just because they're delish. Healthy fats. Anything full of omega-3s like avocados, salmon, and walnuts have been shown to improve mood. Go for the guac. Carbohydrates. When you pair carbs like whole wheat pasta with protein, it helps your body produce serotonin, a get-happy brain chemical. Leafy greens. Plants like spinach and kale are rich with folic acid and vitamin B, a super duo that helps put you in a fab mood. Dark chocolate. The antioxidants found in a chunk of the rich stuff help prevent the stress hormone cortisol from creating anxiety. And lastly, one liquid. Your brain is made up of about 70% water. So when it's hydrated, it functions better. That ultimately helps keep you your feelings in check. So keep that water bottle topped off. Now, we are going to also, I'm going to go back to the other tips as well, but while we're on the food theme, I want to share a recipe with you. One is tomato and feta salad. This is a really quick recipe. It also comes from the March 2017 edition of Glamour, and it's a classic combo for a reason. Tart feta with fresh tomatoes balances perfectly with, let's say, a frittata or an omelet that you might be enjoying. So this is how you make it. Tomato and feta salad. You take three big beefsteak or 12 Campari tomatoes, core them, and slice them into wedges. Take a quarter small red onion, chop them, or slice them thinly. 1 tablespoon red wine or balsamic vinegar. 1 tablespoon olive oil. 8 fresh basil leaves. And that should be cut into small strips, otherwise known as julienne. 1/2 cup crumbled feta or goat cheese. And you can add some kosher salt and black pepper. So what do? You place the tomatoes and the red onion in a large shallow bowl and sprinkle with vinegar, oil, and basil. Add the cheese, season with salt and pepper, toss, and serve. Couldn't be easier, and it is yummy. The other recipe I want to share with you is some oatmeal lace cookies. These cookies are delicate and sweet and not too heavy for a morning meal. You can make them for as little as $2 and well in advance. The dough stores in the refrigerator covered for up to 2 weeks. So you can take them out anytime and make a fresh, you know, few cookies. So this one also, by the way, is from the March 2017 edition of Glamour. You need 1/2 cup of unsalted butter at room temperature, 1 cup sugar, 1 1/2 cups quick cooking rolled oats, 1/4 cup all-purpose flour, 1 tablespoon vanilla extract, and 1/4 teaspoon kosher salt. The method? 1. Mix the butter and sugar in a bowl using a mixer fitted with a paddle, or use a rubber spatula until creamy. Scrape down the sides of the bowl, add remaining ingredients, and mix again. Cover and refrigerate. 2. Heat oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Place teaspoons full of dough 2 inches apart on a baking sheet and smash down a bit. They will spread. Bake until golden brown, 12 to 16 minutes. Allow cookies to rest on baking sheet about 2 minutes, then transfer to a rack to cool. The total makes about 36 cookies. And these two recipes came from Sally Sampson, who is the founder of Chop Chop, a cooking magazine for families. All right, back to the other two tips that we were talking about. One was about food. And the other one is about how to get your smile on. And that is, again, from the 17 Magazine, March 2017 edition. And this little article is by Lucy Saxton. And they're basically 4 little tips about how to get your smile on. 1, stop and smell the citrus. A lemon a day may keep the blues away. It's thought that citrus scents lower the presence of cortisol, which is a hormone that makes you feel stressed. So, citrus scents, and that's S-C-E-N-T-S, smells. All right, the other one, just press play. Quote, to put myself in a good mood, I put on some great music. Lying on the grass with some Ella Fitzgerald is my happy place. And that's from Jordan, who's 18 and lives in San Jose, California. The other tip, chin up. Seriously, though, research shows that when you're feeling down, you actually tend to look down. This can make you feel boxed in. Next time you're feeling sad, look up. And finally, talk it out. Quote, when I need to vent or to get advice, I call my mom or grandma. My mom is like my best friend, so I always go to her. And my grandma is such an inspiration and a role model that I always feel better after speaking to her." End quote. And that's from McKenna, who's aged 19, from Downington, Pennsylvania. Lastly, your last tip, the third one, is really not a tip. It's basically two truths and one lie. Truth: being positive is good for you. You bet. One study showed that constantly having a negative attitude can be just as bad as smoking cigarettes and even lower life expectancy. Another truth: you can choose to be happy. Okay, this one is only sort of true. It's impossible to control your thoughts all the time, but it's easier to control you than the rest of the world. So when possible, try to see the best in a situation. And the lie? You always have to be happy. Life is full of different emotions, and suppressing feelings like disappointment or sadness is not healthy and won't make you feel happier. To be a happy person, you need to be a whole person. Next, we have an essay from Lenier Lopez. She lives in Cuba. Her age is 16. And this is from the book that is entitled Listening to the Children: Testimonials from the World's Blind and Partially Sighted Teenagers. Dear former teachers, as I sit down to write this letter, I can remember all of you with your slim figures standing at the front of the class and talking with such authority, educating me. How enriching that time was! Those were glory years I hold nostalgically in my soul. Nowadays, I've got very different friends from the ones I had at the special school. I learned that obstacles don't matter. What matters is people's ability to overcome them. My classmates now are people who don't have a visual impairment like me, but I am sure they have other deficiencies. Some are shy, some just make fun of everyone, and others have lots of complexes. I don't know. Nobody's perfect, and I think everyone is equal. I've got classmates from lots of different places. Some of them look down on me or just treat me indifferently. But to tell the truth, I don't care. Their spirits are sick, and I forgive them. They don't know how unfortunate they are because they cannot see beyond a person's physical appearance. I can tell you that when I finished primary school, where you were my guides, I went to the EIDE school as a chess player. I met a lot of new people with whom I shared 3 years. After finishing ninth grade, I went on to ESPS, where new minds became part of my life, some to understand me, some to help me, and others to ignore me. There are all kinds of people under the sun, good folk, bad folk, people who come together and create a bitter but comforting drink called life. I can tell you, I feel comfortable socially and proud of myself for being able to take advantage of the opportunities life has given me alongside people who have helped me to grow. I'll say goodbye now, but before I do, I would like to thank you for everything you did for me, for being with me and explaining everything to me. I will win the race life has given me. I'll overcome every hurdle and reach the finish line with a smile on my face. Thanks very much. Slowly but surely. Finally, we have a real treat here. We have a brand new book entitled Not If I See You First by Eric Lindstrom. The back says the rules. Don't deceive me, ever, especially using my blindness. Don't help me unless I ask. Otherwise, you're just getting in my way or bothering me. Don't be weird. Seriously, other than having my eyes closed all the time, I'm just like you, only smarter. Parker Grant doesn't need 20/20 vision to see right through you. That's why she created The Rules. Don't treat her any differently just because she's blind, and never take advantage. There will be no second chances. Just ask Scott Kilpatrick, the boy who broke her heart. When Scott suddenly reappears in her life, Parker tries to ignore him. She has enough on her mind already, like trying out for the track team, doling out tough love advice to her painfully naive classmates, and giving herself gold stars for every day she hasn't cried since her dad's death 3 months ago. But avoiding her past quickly proves impossible. And the more Parker learns about what really happened, both with Scott and her dad, the more she starts to question if things are always as they seem. Maybe some rules are meant to be broken. So what we're going to be doing is reading one or two chapters of this book every session we meet. And I hope that you will enjoy it. It is a brand new book published, in 2015. And this is the prologue. My alarm buzzes and I slap it off and tap the speech button at the same time. Stephen Hawking says, 5:55 a.m. Just double-checking, like always. I crank open the window and stick out my hand. Cool, misty, but not too humid. Probably overcast. I pull on clothes, sports bra, sleeveless shirt, shorts, track shoes, without bothering to check anything, since all my running clothes are black. Except my scarves. I finger through them, checking the plastic tags, gauging my mood. I feel strangely unsettled, so I pick one that might help, the yellow cotton with embroidered happy faces. I tie it around my head like a blindfold, settling a smile on each of my closed eyelids. The rising sun is warm on my cheeks. The sky must be clear, at least at the horizon. I lock the front door and slip the cold key into my sock. Where the path turns to sidewalk, I turn right and start to jog. The 3 blocks to the field are programmed into my feet, my legs, my equilibrium. After 7 years of this, I know every bump, every crack, every exposed root in the sidewalk. I don't need to see where I'm running. I can feel it. Parker, stop! I stumble to a halt, waving my arms like I'm at the edge of a cliff. And if a backhoe came yesterday, I very well could be. I'm so sorry, Parker. It's Mrs. Reich's suffering suburban housewife's voice calling from her porch. Now she's trotting down the driveway, keys jangling. Len's brother came last night. I try not to imagine running into the side of his van. I walk forward, hands out, until I touch cold, dew-covered metal. You don't have to move it. I trace my fingers along the slick car body as I walk around. Of course I'll move it. It'll be gone when you get back. I find the sidewalk again and continue as the van growls behind me. I wait at the corner until Mrs. Reich shuts it off to listen for traffic. I hear nothing but chattering birds, so I step into the intersection. When I touch the chain-link fence of Gunther Field, I turn right. 14 steps to the gap and a left turn through it. One hand slightly forward in case today is the first time in years I misjudged the distance. I pass straight through, like always. The field is over 100 yards across. If any new obstacles have shown up since yesterday, chances are low I'll find them with a single walkthrough. But as crazy as it is to run here at all, it's even crazier without walking it first. I reach the far fence at 142 steps. Pretty typical and all clear. After a few more minutes of stretching, I'm ready to run. 75 strides at a fair pace. A couple dozen walking steps to touch the far fence and back again. After 5 turns, it's time to sprint. 60 strides gets me within 2 dozen walking steps of the far side. Then sidestep a bit to line up again because of drift. The still air is warmer than yesterday, but feels cool as I fly through it. The worst heat of summer is weeks away. 10 sprints and I'm done. After crossing the street, I jog to cool down, but I slow to a walk near the Reich's driveway. I heard the car move, but once a problem occurs to you, it takes a while to forget it. On the other side, where the driveway slopes up to become sidewalk again, I speed up. The instant I open the front door, I know something's wrong. I don't smell any breakfast. Even cereal days include toast. In the kitchen, I hear only the normal sounds of a sleeping house. Refrigerator humming, clock ticking over the stove, my breathing, and when I stop that to listen more closely, my heartbeat. I head for the stairs and stumble on something in the hall. I squat and find my dad lying on the floor, wearing flannel pajama bottoms and a t-shirt. "Dad? Dad, are you okay?" "Parker," he says, his voice oddly flat, not strained or injured. "Did you fall? What happened?" "Listen," he says, still sounding nothing like he should if he were really lying at the base of the stairs. "Everyone has secrets, Parker. Everyone is a secret." That's when I wake up, like always. But it's exactly what really happened last June 3rd, the week after school let out, and 2 weeks after my 16th birthday. Well, except for 2 things. 1, I really did almost run into the Reich's van, but that was a different day a couple weeks later. And 2, my dad wasn't lying at the bottom of the stairs. I found him still in bed, and he had been dead for hours. And that is the end of chapter 1 with the introduction that I read about our new book, Not If I See You First, by Erik Lindstrom. We will continue reading 1 or perhaps 2 chapters a day every time we get together for our teen magazine. And now I'm afraid we have run out of time for today. I hope that you have enjoyed this 29-minute program that we were able to spend together and got some ideas on being happy and some good food. Lots of good things we covered. Well, that brings us to the end of our today's episode of Teen Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Kogal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.